present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello. And welcome to the news quiz, coming to you tonight from the Ipswich Corn Exchange, a building that has seen some... Crikey. A building that has seen some mighty trades going on over the years. If I know one thing about the people of Ipswich, it's that they do not give up their corn lightly. We start with an announcement heard on Radio 3, read by Diana Speed.
Tomorrow morning, oboist Sarah Devenold is one of Andrew McGregor's guests on Record Review, where she will be discussing her clutch of recent wind releases.
Our thanks to Alan Perkins for drawing our attention to that extraordinary incident. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Zoe Lyons? And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkind and Susan Calman. Jeremy, which summit got off to a fantastically dodgy start?
Oh, this is Cameron's corruption summit held in London, the money laundering capital of the world, appropriately, where you can take a fiver into a dry cleaners in the city and they'll press it for you. He was showing off. They had his father's rather. It looked a bit stagey. He was hanging out with the Queen at one of her birthday parties. She has a lot of birthday parties. Because she doesn't know how many she's going to have, so she's having them all now. Which is fair enough, isn't it, really? Anyway, the Queen was there, and little Johnny Burko, no bigger than your thumb, was there. And Archbishop of Canterbury, he was wearing a purple jumpsuit and an enormous cross, looking like a young Sheena Easton. And Cameron was showing off. He was doing his I'm the Prime Minister thing. Thing about being PM is we work hard, but we play hard. And the Queen looked a bit intimidated around it. I don't think she's ever met anyone as posh as Cameron before, so she's a bit like, blimey, he's a real toff, isn't he? So she looking a bit nervous and vulnerable. And he suddenly started showing off about all the terribly corrupt people who were coming to include, you know, the presidents of Afghanistan and Nigeria. And the Archbishop said, hang on a minute, hang on, Cameron. That's unfair. That's unfair. He's trying very hard.
He thought he's learned his lesson as well after the old incident with the mayor of New York following the Scottish referendum, where he told the mayor of New York that on telling the Queen that Scotland had decided to stay, she purred with delight. So it must be really awkward now every time he goes and meets the Queen, because she must know he said that. There must be a bit of her that's going, what did I do, David? Tell me what I did. Nothing, ma'am. Tell me what I did. I purred, didn't I? Do it. Do it how I did it.
But then the Queen did another clangor. She's in the garden, and this weird man who's like a Lord Chamberlain or something, or the equerry or something, with a cue card, dragged her over to meet this police officer, commander, called Lucy Dorsey, going, come over here and meet this copper, Liz, you'll love her. She hates the Chinese. Come and have a chat. Philip's been banging on about them all morning. No, come on, she's got a new spin on it, this one. Come and have a word. And he introduced her to this copper, and then Lucy Dorsey just offloaded about, oh, do you know, I've had a terrible time. Oh, she was upset, and then the Queen piled in. I know what you mean. They are bloody bastards. They're so rude. Bloody rude bastard Chinese. Phil can't stand them, and I can't stand them. But it all looked really staged, because there's a cameraman right there. It wasn't like someone was filming on their phone or something. It was the royal cameraman who follows her around all the time with an enormous camera.
Maybe she just doesn't know who he is or what that thing is on his shoulder all the time.
What a strangely shaped horse.
It's the start of a new era for the Queen, which I'm quite looking forward to. She's 90. The older I get, the less I care what anyone thinks. And I like the fact she's gone a bit gangster. I think it probably was staged. She was like, I'm 90. Who cares anymore? And she's just like, you know, bitches be truthing, mic drop. The Chinese are... you know, she's just, I'm just gonna tell it like it is.
You think it, the Queen says it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Channel 5 show... waiting to happen.
Differentially, this is the faux pas committed by David Cameron when he was filmed telling the Queen that Afghanistan and Nigeria are fantastically corrupt. That's fantastically as in very, not as in they're corrupt. Isn't it fantastic? I must holiday there immediately. On the David Cameron foreign leader scale, the fantastically corrupt Afghan government ranked just above the marvellously despotic Kim Jong-un and the gorgeously genocidal Robert Mugabe. Nigeria is actually, we ought to point out, not as corrupt as they used to be, which was also the electoral slogan of UKIP's Neil and Christine Hamilton. Also this week, the Queen was caught on camera calling the Chinese diplomats who attended the state visit rude. This isn't the first gaffe the Queen has made. She once gave birth to Prince Andrew. 2 points to Jeremy. Zoe, why might it all kick off if we head off?
This is the Brexit campaign rolling on. It's only 6 weeks now, people, till we get to vote. Oh, God, it's going to get so exciting. Actually, driving up here to Ipswich, I noticed quite a lot of vote leave posters in fields on the way up. There's a lot of fields that want to get out of Europe in this part of the country. But what happened this week is that Cameron gave a speech where he hinted that by leaving the EU, we were opening ourselves up to the possibility of war in Europe is really what he was suggesting. He was suggesting that, we can't rule it out. If we leave, there could be war in Europe. And I don't know where the threat was coming from. I don't know whether it was a drone attack from Luxembourg or a second Spanish Armada or just Merkel in a U-boat. I'm not entirely sure. But it's quite interesting, because only a few months ago, Cameron was saying if he didn't get his negotiations that he wanted to stay within the EU, he would very happily leave. And he seems to have forgotten that he's mentioned that. Alongside Cameron saying that if we leave, there'll be war, there was Boris set off on his Brexit campaign in the Boris Brexit Battle Bus. Sounds like a really bad kids' programme that never got a second series, doesn't it? And he arrived in Cornwall brandishing a Cornish pasty as a sign of good old Britishness, a Cornish pasty that actually got its status as a recognised geographical food from the EU Commission. So there you go. But it doesn't matter where you look at them. If you look at the stay campaign, it's, stay or it'll be pestilence, plague, war, you'll lose your teeth and your hair will thin. Or it's the leave campaign, and if we don't, it'll be pestilence, war, tooth decay and your hair will thin. So it's very, very confusing to know which way it's going to go. I have a sneaking suspicion whatever happens now, very little will happen. That's what I have the feeling that this could be the second millennium bug. Do you remember that? Do you know the only thing that happened was after the millennium? My video shop, its computer went down, and I got to keep a video for an extra day without a fine.
That's what they want you to think. I'm getting fascinated by the art. Part of me thinks it would be quite fun to leave just to find out what happened, because they're over-egging it so much. I do want to see what. To me, it's a bit like letting all the zoo animals out. Probably not a great idea, but it would be fun, wouldn't it? How cool would it be to see a lion in Aldi? Just
there's a balance, Dave, between information and fear-mongering. And I suspect he's tipping slightly. Because the thing is, this is so important. It's not just about Europe. It's about the Conservative Party. And so it's more important to Dave than Europe. It's about actually who will then lead the Conservative Party, David Cameron or the wonderful Boris Johnson and his Cornish pasties.
It's entirely about that. I don't think any of it's to do with Europe. It's completely about. And you just think the Tories. You just think, look, could you just take this leadership contest somewhere else? It's like a couple that come to your house for dinner having a blazing row. Look, can you resolve these issues someplace else? We're trying to have a nice, relaxed referendum discussion, and you're insisting on having this blazing row, and I know you're going to shag like rabbits when you get home.
Angry Tory makeup sex.
I was about to say something, but I just did a little sip.
Doesn't this all go back to some feud at Eton about something? Yeah. But one of them accidentally shot the other one's fag or something.
That's right, yes.
Something like that.
And then he buried him in quite a shallow grave, which is considered very rude.
Yeah. Because he's always hated Cameron, hasn't he? He really wants to destroy Cameron. But Cameron said he was going to go anyway. He's just going to go and open a garden centre or something. Open a pub in, you know, pub cum creche in Oxfordshire.
I think that the problem is there's nowhere to go. This is, I think, the main point about David Cameron's threats. If you're 6 weeks out and you're talking about war, there's not a lot. Where else do you go from
zombie attack?
Exactly. I mean, you're really then talking about made-up apocalyptic scenarios.
Well, you say that, but like, you get a sense of seeing just Boris travelling around the southwest on a bus. That is a sort of vision, really, of an apocalyptic scenario.
did you see how they had this terrible embarrassment because it turns out the bus was made in Germany and it would be more important to import. It would be more expensive to import it here outside the EU. So they've benefited enormously in putting together their Boris battle bus from being in the EU. Speaking of Germans, I had my German lesson this morning. I have a weekly German lesson. And my German teacher said to me this morning, said, "What have you been doing this morning?" And I was trying to say it in German. I said, "I've just been procrastinating. What's the word in German?" And he said, "There isn't one."
Bucolically, this is David Cameron's claim that the European Union creates peace on the continent, which some have taken as a claim that Brexit could ultimately lead to the onset of World War III. I think David Cameron's got a point. The history of Europe shows us that about once every 100 years we see the emergence of a diminutive dictator who will stop at nothing until they have lain waste to the entire continent. Sturgeon, it's your time to shine. Boris Johnson spent part of the week touring Cornwall for Vote Leave, because you're always likely to get votes to leave the EU from people who don't even much like being in the same country as Devon. Boris announced this week that he has 5 questions he wants to ask every Remain supporter. They include, where am I? Who's this woman? And can I get my hand out of this jar without letting go of the biscuit? 2 points to Zoe. Hugo, who has assured people that everything will be all white?
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, good. this would be the government's white paper on the BBC, BBC charter reform, which has been very contentious. Basically, there's this thing that conservatives like to do when amongst themselves and amongst other people too, and it's kind of traditional, but what they like to do is they like to sit around and talking about sort of these big institutions in Britain, well, not just in Britain, like the NHS or the EU or the BBC, and they like saying, yeah, they're rubbish, they're full of lefties, they've gone to the dogs, it doesn't work, rip it up and we'll just start again. And they do it, and it's just banter. They do it for fun. You know, they all get along. But just occasionally, some Tory comes along who's heard all this banter and he believes it and he gets into a position of power and then he tries to do it and he says, guys, that thing we were talking about, we're going to do that. At which point they all go, what? No, that's mental, for God's sake. And sometimes that means you have to have a referendum. But this time... this time it's meant that they've published their white paper on charter renewal at the BBC. And it's not at all what everybody had feared. Everybody feared that the BBC was going to be eviscerated in various ways. And there's pretty much nothing is happening. There are a few changes. They're going to reveal the salaries and identities of all BBC stars who earn over £450,000, which, such as myself and my fellow panellists, I assume. So obviously we're all very worried about that. They're going to be regulated by Ofcom rather than by the BBC Trust, or whatever that means. And so nothing's really happened at all.
I watched it. I watched John Whittingdale's speech in the Commons, and what I noticed, Miles, which I thought was quite interesting, is he singled out certain shows for praise, Jeremy Vine's show, Strictly Come Dancing, and there was one very clear omission from his list, which was the news quiz.
Maybe he just doesn't enjoy it. Maybe it's not his thing.
Well,
we know what his thing is.
I think he clearly, the Downing Street intervened, didn't they, and cracked the whip there. So effectively, his hands were tied in that sense.
I heard there was a gagging order.
But there was there was a discussion on the BBC about it, and somebody said, look, if people from the right and the left are attacking the BBC, that means that basically, broadly, that means that it's not biased. No, it doesn't. It means it's biased to the centre. And if everybody's attacking you, that's just, you might be a bit rubbish. Not saying the BBC is rubbish.
But it's certainly worth
in
putting out
terms
there,
of, in terms of the money it pays radio people, it's appalling.
I get paid in gold. I demand to be paid in gold by the BBC every time to keep it safe, and I keep it under my bed.
I get paid in loose tea.
Do you?
I get working families tax credit.
What were the things that people were afraid might happen then? That
they thought they were going to make the BBC programme popular programmes not at the same time as ITV's popular programmes, which, because Strictly and The X Factor or whatever are on at the same time.
The BBC could put up, when you know there's some sort of glitzy reality thing on ITV at the same time as BBC, you want something that's not like that, that's about, I don't know, barging or
no.
punting. Or
no, because then it's... It
fruit picking. Conkers.
It's kind of a. It's kind
types of falafel. cornicing.
I think it's slightly insulting to think.
Copper.
The people who.
Weaving. Flans.
The people who watch the BBC.
Gear changing. Teasingly, Culture Secretary John Whittingdale this week published his white paper on the future of the BBC. The new settlement will guarantee the future of the BBC for the next 11 years, but it will be forced to make more ambitious and innovative content. Great news for those of us presiding over a show in its 90th series. All this has a big impact on the question that I'm sure is uppermost in the minds of our audience here in Ipswich. What's going to happen to Look East? Well, sad to say, it will continue in exactly the same way. The BBC's top earners will be required to disclose their salaries. There are 10 BBC stars who are paid over £450,000. We don't know who they are, but I can't be the only one wondering how Postman Pat can afford a helicopter. The BBC will close the iPlayer loophole, meaning that only licence fee payers will be able to access it. How tragic that the current system, in which iPlayer says, "Are you a UK licence payer? If so, click here," has been deemed insufficiently secure. I remember the days when you could leave your doors unlocked and your windows open and set up a multi-million pound internet streaming service, safe in the knowledge that it would not be abused. 2 points to Hugo. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Susan have 4, but Jeremy and Zoe have 5. We start round two with this extract from the inside cover of Chris Packham's new memoir.
An introverted, unusual young boy, isolated by his obsessions and a loner at school, Chris Packham only felt himself in the fields and woods around his suburban home.
Thanks to James Reynolds in Edinburgh for sending us that. Hope you enjoy the rest of the book as well. Zoe, who's not wedded to the principle of gratitude?
This is a really horrific story of a woman who went to a wedding of an ex-colleague, had a lovely day at the wedding, gave the newlyweds, I would say, a rather generous gift of a £100 cheque. A couple of days later, received an email back from the newlyweds, and I'll read you exactly what it said. We are surprised that your contribution did not seem to match the warmth of your good wishes on our big day. And in view of your position, if you wanted to send any adjustment, it would be thankfully received. Wow, I'm surprised that the newlyweds could even type that with their greedy little trotters on the keyboard. So this woman was infuriated, obviously, and confused and upset, and decided to post this email on Mumsnet, the forum of furious fallopian women.
angry, get out of my way, I have a Volvo pram. And
I would have adjusted my gift. I would have adjusted my gift quite considerably. I'd have sent them the traditional toaster gift with a cheque for £100 burnt inside it. That's
Weddings are just sort of crowdfunding for holidays, aren't they now? Because the thing is that people have stuff. The whole point was, when my mum and dad got married in the early 50s, they didn't have anything, because you lived with your mum and dad until you got married, and then you had no things of your own. Whereas now people get married later, they kind of get to about 35 and think, well, I've pretty much done it with everyone else who'll let me. I suppose I better keep this one. And then they... they've already been cohabiting, so they've got everything. They haven't been straining spaghetti through scalded fingers and grating Parmesan with their bare nails. So they don't need stuff. So they think, well, get a few quid out of them, though.
No, when I got married, I had a wedding list at John Lewis, and it was the most exciting thing that's ever happened, because we went round and we've got a beautiful set of like quite posh crockery. I got married...
Have you ever used it?
No. Do you know, we were just saying the other day, because I opened up the bureau, and I went, oh, there's crockery in
there. The bureau. You opened up the bureau.
Who gave you the bureau?
Like, I bought the bureau. I've got a bureau in the hall with
what,
the crockery.
What, like the FBI?
This woman was just... She wasn't even a close friend of these newlyweds, which I find even, you know, 100 quid. And you think, well, most marriages end within 10 years, don't they? I mean, that's... It's a tenner a year. That's enough, isn't it? I'd have given them 50 quid, and then if they'd made it to the 10 years, given them the other 50 bonus. Quid. Like, 50 quid is a deposit.
50 up front.
Yeah, 50 up front, and then if you make it 10 years, you get the next 50.
People do immediately. The minute you get in the car after a wedding, you start tearing the whole thing apart. You do, you get involved, isn't it? Love, oh, bye, love you. What did she look like in that dress? Oh, my God.
Atavistically, this is the tale of a disgruntled wedding guest who, instead of getting a gift from the approved list, sent the happy couple a cheque for £100 before receiving an email in return suggesting that the amount was not generous enough and would she like to top it up. In my view, cash is too impersonal. Get the couple something they'll need in married life, like a bread maker, to distract them from the realisation that their life is effectively over. Actually, I yearn for the old days when the only wedding gift you would get would be from the Lord of the Manor, and it would come in the form of taking first dibs on the bride. Yet another harmless British tradition that has been stolen from us. Bloody Brussels. Well, if anyone is attending a wedding this weekend and is struggling for gift inspiration, you simply can't go wrong with nipple tassels and a cage-fighting course. You're welcome. 2 points to Zoe. For our last question tonight, we'll be focusing on the biggest stories this week in the Ipswich and wider Suffolk area. So let's play what we have, I think distressingly, decided to call the Ips Quiz. We have buzzers in this round, which may well cause some of our most devoted listeners to wake up abruptly. So, panel, which of this week's big breaking Ipswich and Suffolk stories are we talking about here? First up, whose crackdown has been a load of crap? Susan.
Ipswich Borough Council have not been cracking down as much as they should have on dog fouling. In the past 5 years, they've only issued 5 fines for dog fouling, and apparently...
People defecating on dogs.
Yes. They have. They've got bins in the parks, but I don't know if you've ever tried to get a dog to poo in a bin. Especially when it's wall-mounted, it can be quite difficult. Well, you've got someone called Andrew Hawes in Ipswich who's been known apparently as the turdinator because he confronts... Because he confronts people whose dogs poo. It's very bad. There are some real... hot spots in Ipswich, Christchurch Street, and Longstrops.
Longstrops are the worst to bag, aren't they?
Yeah,
they really are. I've got a dog, and if he does a Longstrop, I'm like, oh, that's a double bagger.
Fulminatingly, this is Ipswich's crackdown on dog fouling, which in the space of a year has raised fines totalling the princely sum of nothing. Residents have claimed that the local police are blind to the issues. Well, if they won't wash their hands, then they will pay the price. There is an Ipswich resident who styles himself as the Turdinator in what is a multifaceted attempt to come to terms with some extremely complex self-esteem issues. whose fate is in the hands of security? Susan.
An actor called Tim Watson, who plays someone called Rob Titchener in The Archies, is coming to a fa- Oh, listen to them already.
It's coming, only made up, for God's sake.
It's coming to a... He's going to be at a fete in a village with a population of 420, and the organisers are concerned because, and I quote, feelings amongst Archers fans are running high. Oh, I can only imagine. There'll be blood in the streets. And apparently they're concerned that people, because... And I have not ever listened to The Archies. but I understand Rob is a wrong'un. And people think he, the actor, is the same as the man. And so in this small village fete, there's going to be immense security so that nobody hurts the man off the Archers.
Colourfully, elsewhere in Suffolk, there is to be a fete in Monk's Ely where extra security may have to be hired to protect Archers actor Tim Watson due to fears that fans might attack him because of the despicable behaviour of his character Rob Titchener. Fete committee member Nicola Gooch said, "Rob is a fictional character and I'm sure Archers listeners will be able to tell the difference." The optimism of some people really is remarkable. A fete committee member gleefully announced, "We're thrilled that Tim is coming to our annual fete and hope that it will help raise awareness of the issue of domestic violence and coercive control." Well, call me a traditionalist. I prefer a tombola. Two points to everyone. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Jeremy.
This is sent in by Linda Ed from Bury St Edmunds, and it's an email from the Association of Teachers and Lecturers advertising some courses for members. Saturday, 16th of April, Bury St Edmunds, Building Resilience for a Better Work-Life Balance and optional brewery tour.
Zoe.
This has been sent in by Tony McEwen in Toronto, and it's a cutting from the CBC News. An elderly woman in St John has died after being struck by a man in a motorised wheelchair. Now many others have come forward to say that the same thing has happened to them.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Zoe have 9, but this week's winners are Hugo and Susan with 12. Before we leave you, here is a breaking story seen by Pat Dawson Harrington on Fox News in Tennessee.
A woman is recovering in hospital after being shot in the Nutbush area overnight.
Imagine that. Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Jeremy Hardy, Zoe Lyons, Hugo Rifkind and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Diana Speed. The chair's script is written by Lucy Clark, Max Davis and James Kettle, with additional material by Liam Byrne, Ed Amston and Tom Coles. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Radio Comedy production.